Deo from standdeo.com is our guest each and every Tuesday in the third hour. Check out his website, standdeo.com, Holly's new book, Prophetic Perils, End Time Events Revealed, as well as so much more content from upcoming interviews Stan's doing to old conference videos and presentations he's put on to upcoming ones. It's always great to have Stan on the show. We're going to be talking about a number of issues. If you go to standdeo.com, on the right-hand side next to the microphone is the show images page. Click on there, and you can see the topics that we're talking about. And there's a lot that Stan has put up for tonight's broadcast, and my dad is holding Holly's new book.
And this is 17 pounds. No, it just feels that way. A chock full of great information by Holly Deo. Folks, this is the book, Prophetic Perils. I mean, Stan writes very well, but Holly, man, Holly can write. This is a great book. I was just looking at the image here.
Yeah.
I don't want to. Yeah. Okay. There it is.
Stan, it's great to have you back on the program. Looks like you're working on a lot of things. How's it going?
Oh, a few here and there.
Well, what do you want to get into first, Stan?
Well, first, I got to tell you, you don't have to sugarcoat my writing ability, guys. I'd rather discover stuff than write about it. Holly was the one that went and took English and got a degree in that at the university. But, you know, fortunately, she can kind of clean up some of my grammar. And I kind of have to write like I'm speaking to somebody, and that's apparently not the done thing, but that's the way I communicate. So, you know, maybe next lifetime I'll be a writer.
Well, Stan, and I apologize. I didn't mean to make it sound anything other than the fact that Holly's book, I don't know if I could ever in my lifetime write a book like this. I mean, the amount of time, and you had spoken about it before, and I won't spend much time on it, but man, oh man, I went through this again. Just the amount of information. There's not a wasted line in this book. There's nothing wasted. There's no extra space. It's not in 14-point font. It's just an amazing resource manual. I just want to just give her a hug for writing it, because it's a great
book.
Hey,
tell you what, give her a thing, an email, you know, telling what you thought about the book, because we're going to collect some of those this next week and put them up onto the book page to show,
okay,
you know, the people's reaction to it. We're getting a couple of really good reactions already before we even put up the request. Sure. One guy said he's kept it away from his wife because he wanted to read it and not be interrupted, because it's just so much information. And, you know, I'm thinking maybe you should have bought two copies. But anyway, we're getting a lot of good reports, feedback, that just absolutely sterling presentation there, like you're saying. So I'm prejudiced, yeah. I understand, but I'm telling you what, we're getting an email.
Well, I'm just going to say this to the audience. There's one chapter. Well, no, it's not even a chapter. It's part of a chapter that really, I had to look some things up. Not that I didn't believe her, but it really blew my mind when I read it. And I'm just going to leave that as a teaser for the audience. Actually, it had something to do with 9/11, and I'll just leave it at that. So, thank
you. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Is my mic fading in and out on you at all?
No.
No.
Oh,
you're 5x5.
Okay, well, what I'm hearing here, I don't know whether it's my headpiece or what. Something is just fading in and out a bit. But anyway, as long as you're good from hearing me, it's pretty good. An interesting thing. I found a news article that, it wasn't recent, but it was something that occurred a few months back, and it's reported I think it was reported March the 10th this year, a new Eastern Outlook is Saudi Arabia running out of gas. And this is really important information, because everybody thought Saudi the last few years, apparently, they have been denying any non-Saudi seismologist and reservoir analyst to come in and determine how much reserve oil they've got there, you know, for the world reserve figures to see how much fuel the world's got left. Now, there was a report that was published in August of 2015 by Ambrose Evans Pritchard. And in it, let's see here, a recent Citigroup study suggested that Saudi Arabia may actually run out of oil by the year 2030. That's only 13 years from now, guys. And if they do, one of the major suppliers of the game is out of the game, which explains why young Prince Salman, the guy we've been watching, has gone for this remake of Saudi Arabia by 2030, same date. We're going to not be so dependent on oil. We're going to go to other things like mining and minerals and tourism, things like that. He's got all kinds of irons in the fire at the moment, diversifying while his shares in Aramco are still worth a lot of money. So he's saying, I'm going to sell 2-5% of my shares or the country's shares in Aramco, which is the major oil handling company there for America and Saudi Arabia, share 50-50. Anyway, Aramco is what they've been depending on. But I really smell a rat. Now, what does this mean? If his country, his people, are all up in arms about him changing Sharia law and trying to make it softer so that tourists can come in and foreign archaeologists can come in and find neat places, like I did, like the whole country is Atlantis. I mean, that's kind of neat. But he's depending on that, but his people are divided heavily about whether to support this move to something away from oil, which gave them a lot of give-me-frees to the population. I mean, they've been very generous with the population and sharing the wealth of the country. So there is a side that supports him and a side that doesn't. And this is causing, the potential for civil discord and perhaps civil war within Saudi Arabia eventually, not today, but eventually. Now, Saudi Arabia has made a deal behind the scenes with Pakistan to be able to buy, if they haven't already done it, nuclear warheads to use on Iran. Now, the Saudis do not like Iran and their brand of Islam, and vice versa. Iran doesn't like Saudi Arabia. But the other countries around that are not Iran but are allied with Saudi Arabia in that 34-nation consortium are probably going to do whatever Saudi Arabia leads them to do. With that kind of an army and with nuclear weapons allegedly to go against Iran, he could easily change direction and go left instead of right at the northern part of Saudi Arabia and go for Israel. Relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia and the United States are all very, very delicate because Israel is having to brace for an Iranian nuclear country, with crazies at the helm. Saudi Arabia is now joining the crazies at the helm. They're going to get nukes to defend themselves against Iran, of course. And that's why I'm sure Prince Salman has been over to the White House in the last 3 months several times, and probably a lot by secure phone, etc., talking to Obama about something. And I'll bet you a dime to donut, the major part of it is we want nukes. And, it might be that the United States encourages Pakistan to deliver them or something like that. But the Middle East is getting prepared to erupt into full-scale war in all kind of directions. The Saudis they've opened up a new factory there. It's kind of like a park, a technology park, going for advanced weapons production in Saudi Arabia. And they are saying that they want to defend the eastern part and northeastern part of Saudi Arabia over near where the oil fields are at Dammam, which is Aramco on the west coast of the Persian Gulf. So all this stuff tells me that the whole area, they're all about to just start, shooting at each other, and with big guns. I mean, the nuke gun. So watch the press. I mean, watch every day, because with Turkey and with Israel and Iran and Saudi Arabia, you've got major players, and Pakistan, major players that are involved in this, and I don't even know if they know, the leaders of these countries, who to trust amongst their own group. They've got infighting, and they've got nuclear weapons. I'm sure this is not what the British thought about at the end of World War One when they partitioned, and World War Two when they partitioned all of the Arabian countries into territories that took some sheikh's territory and gave it to another, that kind of stuff, thinking it would create such discord they never get together. But they have done, and they have done with nuclear weapons, which weren't an issue at the time. Well, at the end of World War Two, they became an issue, but they're really an issue now. So, all right, is Prince Salman, okay, he's still on my list as one of the possible antichrists, but Erdogan is really, you know, running first place at the moment, I think. If you read, let's see here, where have we got this? I think I've got it on the side here. I don't see it. Yeah, right. You'll see about the second row down the middle, you'll see pictures of guys with a blue flag on their face with a C or half moon and a star. And this is from Walid Shabbat's Shabbat, Shoebat.com awareness and action site. He's a Christian fellow, but he was originally Muslim. And the Muslims in Turkey are beating people, forcing them to take the mark of the beast, he says. And when you look at it, this mark, if you don't have that mark, show your allegiance to the Turkish government, the Turkish crescent flag, you get beaten up, and quite badly, they say. So I don't know whether this is the mark of the beast or the forerunner of it, but at least Erdogan, he's taking over Turkey. And it's right in the middle of the east and west legs of the old Roman Empire, so a revived Roman Empire would probably include him in some structure or Turkey. He's also reported in the Russian press and Sputnik News. He said that he suspects that the attempted coups are not over, that maybe another one coming. Telegraphing, in fact, he's probably going to do another purge of people that have irritated him or he doesn't want his new, a dictatorial state, and that's what it's becoming. Third row down the middle, you'll see all these red flags with C and the star on it for, Turkey. And if you click on that, in that article, it tells about these banners, and the banners say the vast majority gathered in the sea of red Turkish flags were Erdogan supporters, some with banners reading, "You are a gift from God, Erdogan," and others say, "Order us to die, and we will do it, Erdogan." This is incredible in this modern day and age to see this kind of fanaticism, isn't it?
I'd like to say no, but it's less and less surprising as each day goes by, as we see the violence that continue to increase around the world and the suicide bombings and the attacks on innocents.
I know.
This is what the manipulation has done and has created.
Yeah, what has happened in the United States, what is will happen here toward now in the end of the year in the election stuff, all of this is part of a global plan to take control of the United States and its assets and to, get rid of people that would be resisting that, which would be kind of the conservative Christian Judaic population. Otherwise, how could you explain all the terrible, stupid mistakes that this administration and the Bush administration made, to destroy this country? President Clinton, the former one, Bill, he did things that, denied us having rights to intellectual property protected. He didn't give legislation or strength to it and enforce it to stop Chinese and Mexican and other countries from importing stolen technology. They would see something. They put up a desk, and Clinton allowed this in the patent office because I talked with them when I was trying to file a patent. And they have what's called the Chinese desk there. And that silly guy sits there, and he reads through everything. And, that's a good one. We'll have that. Shipped it back home. And within a few weeks, they've got a better version of it on the market, boxed and on the West Coast here of the United States. So Clinton didn't protect us there. And in addition to that, it made it so that it was cheaper for businesses to run over to Mexico and China and, you know, Taiwan and places like that and Japan to do business and then have their product imported back into the States. A lot of what Trump is saying he wants to get rid of is exactly what has happened. Whether he can do it, whether he will do it, who knows? But this is just so bad. It's crazy. Yeah, I have another little article about Erdogan. He didn't like this guy, Gulen, who was apparently behind the first coup attempt, but Gulen lives in isolation here over in the United States, kind of not only in isolation, but he's an outcast. I forget what you call it, but anyway, he's been, like, denied entry into Turkey, or he's a dead man. And Erdogan says, you know, I'm going to make Gulen's house a public urinal. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy we're dealing with.
Yeah, and Gulen's actually, last I saw reported, he is in Pennsylvania.
That's right, in self-exile.
26 acres in Pennsylvania. We've actually, I've been there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Dr. Paul Williams wrote a book based on, in part, the investigation that we had done. This is going back probably 5 or 6 years ago. So, very interesting dynamics, Stan. I don't know. I mean, I don't.
Tell me what you found out there about his compound there in Pennsylvania. What's the story with him?
Well, I don't want to. Okay, I was at the time. Now this is going back into 2006. 2007, he was running what some had said was a training compound. It was on par with the Muslims of the Americas or Jamaat al-Fukra in that kind of that realm, in that venue, where he was actually training or at least funneling the people, I don't even know what to call them, through like a training camp, if you will, where 26 acres, you can hide a lot of things and put a lot of people. And he was actually, at the time I was there, and I had spoken to neighbors, I had spoken off the record to the sheriff of that county, or the county, I'm sorry, deputy sheriff of that county, who refused, who said, look, I will deny I ever said this, but we suspect that there is paramilitary style training going on, not on a local level, but for international purposes. That was back in, like I said, 06, 07, and I had no knowledge at that time the role that Gulen actually was playing with Turkey or would play with Turkey here in 2016. So we're talking about 10 years ago. So it can, in short, like a Jamaat al-Fukra, Muslims of the Americas, International Quranic Institute, whatever you want to call it, Sheikh Mubarak Ali Jalani style ideology to funnel fighters, paramilitary people into, or at least out of the United States into places like Turkey. And that's the information we had.
Well, now, I don't know that that would have been against Erdogan, because he didn't take office president until 2014, and he's been kicking and, you know, scrapping his way to the top, well, probably before 2007. But I don't know whether, well, I don't know. Gulen may have known him.
I'm not certain what the intent was, except at that time, and he's been in exile there since the late 70s, maybe. I don't recall offhand, but or he's been there for quite some time, but clearly there was some international component to the training, to the funneling of at least men out of the United States. And again, I'm saying this with some reservation, because there was a lot of misinformation and misdirection that we encountered down there, but I still think that the guy, there's something going on there in the 26 acres. I don't know what it is.
You know, Gulen, he was, he supported the, in English, the Justice and Development Party, the Adalet V, partyist, whatever in Turkish. It's, you know, the AKP party. And, it was, that party, I guess, is still the largest political party in Turkey. And, you know, it has a majority in their parliament. But, Erdogan was the president of that. I don't know what year he was the president of it, but I know that Gulen is against the AKP party, has been, you know, forever. So that might be that he's against the party and was looking at overthrowing a party that he was a member of, you know, for some reason down the line. I don't know. I guess because maybe Erdogan's supporters were taking control of it. It's probably religious. I don't know. You know, there are two brands of Islam in the country, two major brands anyway. Anyhow, it's definitely a problem over there. And Gulen, I suspect, has been long time, you know, long term, has been planning to restructure Turkish politics the way that he thinks it should go. So that does make sense when I think about it. Jay, amazing. No,
thanks. Yeah, I was surprised at the scope, and I still am surprised at the scope, when you talk about a rather remote, obscure, but large area in the middle of nowhere, basically in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania, and how that would affect international, all things international, especially in Turkey. I mean, it's kind of, it's interesting to me.
Yeah. Well, I guess there are a lot of places. I mean, if Bigfoot can hide out somewhere, I suppose these guys could too. I'm just being silly. There's a, listen, shifting gears here for a second before we get to the half hour thing. For you're taking calls at the half hour, are you?
We didn't plan on it, Stan.
I thought that was your normal thingy. Okay.
Well, we can. I mean, it's up to you, brother. Whatever you feel like doing.
Yeah, we can do that. I'd planned for only 30 minutes of major news stuff here, so that you had time. I might run slightly over that, but anyway. I've got a link to a video. It's in the, let me just see here, in the show images page. It's in the top right-hand, or top left-hand thing. You see a picture of the sun and the planets. It's a video worth viewing. It's only 9.5 minutes long, and it make some points, which I started checking out, and boy, you know, they're pretty amazing things here. They're talking about the increase in the magnetic field of the sun. You know, I thought I kept up with things here, but I didn't realize that the magnetic field had, you know, increased so drastically, like 230% or something like that. In the video, it does say it in print, so you can get the exact figure. But it also shows that the moon, of course, the Earth, let me just see here. I can probably just get that figure. I want to get that percentage of the magnetic field change in the sun. It's the omega CI factor. Let me just, not that you'd be interested in that, but anyway, here we go. Is that it? In California. Okay, yeah, 230% increase in magnetic field of the sun since 1901. Which I think is probably due to the coming change. I think it's going to occur in the sun. I think it's going to be a major phase state change, as I've talked about, where it will suddenly throw off a whole shell of dust and debris, fine particle debris, but high speed stuff that will whiz out into the solar system and affect not only Earth but the other planets as well. And we know that the moon is apparently growing an atmosphere now then of what they call natrium, but that's just the Greek name or Latin name for sodium, like it's sodium and salt, sodium chloride. It's sodium, and it's leaving a trail of sodium vapor behind it. So why is it now developing an atmosphere? Is it because the increase in the magnetic field? Is it because of certain other wavelengths of energy coming out of the sun, increasing the evaporation of, you know, sodium compounds in the surface of the moon? There's what they call a 6,000 kilometer, that's about 3,600 mile, 3,700 to 4,000 mile deep layer of sodium on around the moon that wasn't there before. So that's a significant atmosphere, if you want to call it that. It's a cloud of sodium gas surrounding the moon. Anyway, it's in this video. If you click on that, you can see discussions on that and on Venus. This was a new one for me. Venus, in the last 40 years, has increased its brightness at the poles, you know, where the auroral displays occur, you know, magnetic fields interact with its local field, 2,500%, which is 25 times what it used to be 40 years ago, the brightness coming from these auroral displays on Venus. Now, of course, it's the second planet closest to the sun, and maybe it's directly being like a canary, you know, to warn about changes in the sun itself. Mars, you've got huge storms, and the ice caps there, they're carbon dioxide ice caps, but they're disappearing. It's got its own global warming, and that's definitely not due to human activity, as far as I know, anyway.
Hold that thought, Stan. We're going to go to break. Folks, if you want to talk to Stan Deo, 844-769-2944. We'll be right back with Stan. Is the number if you want to talk with Stan. Again, 844-769-2944. As we are joined with Stan Deo from standeo.com each and every Tuesday at this time. And folks, if you got any questions or comments or issues you want to bring up with Stan, give us a call.
You know, folks, take advantage of this. Take advantage of this, because how often do you get to talk with Indiana Jones, a real Indiana Jones? Not too often. So I got to tell you, it's, to me, this is, I'd be dialing like my life depended on it. But, Stan, I want to thank you so much for being part of our lineup here. It's, the information that you have on standeo.com is just absolutely amazing, and we really appreciate it, brother. We really do.
Well, thank you for that. It's a pleasure to do it. Privilege too. Before we went to the break, I was telling you about the changes in the solar system. That video, as I say, it's only 9.5 minutes long, and I didn't do it. But the spot facts checking I've done on it does show it to be valid. You have to dig for it, but it's there. And you know, to me, this indicates changes throughout the entire solar system. Obviously, everything hangs on the nature of the sun and the condition of the sun and the changes in the sun. It has nothing to do with cow gas or too many cars using gasoline, stuff like that, or diesel. That's such a minor factor in the equation for what's happening to the Earth that, to call it global warming here, it's just it's wrong. It's just wrong. We're suffering a complete solar system change, a warming due to various other frequencies of light and electromagnetic radiation coming out of the sun. And just to clarify, electromagnetic radiation it can be in the infrared range, which is heat, it's a wide band, and ultraviolet, which causes things to generate heat that absorb it. And since 1992, we know that we've had at least two new major ultraviolet bands come out of the sun. There's something going on with the sun, and it's not billions of years away, as I've said many times before. Jupiter has had a 200% increase in brightness of the surrounding plasma clouds around it. Large gas belts in its atmosphere have changed colors, and cloud levels in those bands have thickened, and some of them have even dissolved, disappeared. Saturn, the next one out, major increase in the jet stream around the equator, and the speeds of them have increased in just the last 30 years. And around the equator, they've also had a sudden surge of X-ray emissions coming from the equator of Saturn. Uranus become very bright, and there's more clouds on it. Again, these are all factors which indicate that they're being warmed, or you know, affected to cause warmness to come out of their elements on their surface by the sun. Uranus is out there a ways. It's let's see, just inside Neptune. But anyway, on that video, I'm not selling anything, but Neptune itself has had an increase of 40% in its atmospheric brightness in the measurement period there. I don't know whether that's 30 years or slightly longer than that, but still enough so to be reported. Pluto, which was either a moon or we're not sure whether it's a rogue planet that came out of the Kuiper Belt or whatever, but it had a 300% increase in atmospheric pressure. And Pluto is getting farther away from the sun in its normal highly elliptic orbit. But for Pluto to get an increase in its atmospheric pressure while it's moving farther from the sun, you would think it would decrease getting cooler. But it's picking up some kind of some bandwidth of radiation that is causing it to heat up, or there's some kind of planetary chemistry going on that we have no idea about that is causing it to generate more heat or pressure. From, you know, the pressure, I'm thinking, is a direct result of some kind of heat activity, you know, adding energy to the atmosphere. But that might be wrong as well. I mean, I just assume that was what would link to it. But still, the effect is there. And we know here on Earth that we've got huge worldwide weather and geophysical changes. There's no question about that. I get emails from people. I'm looking at some stuff for a guy over in Asia that wrote to me about, he's an American living there, wrote to me about the sun rising in the, you know, at the end of the road. It didn't go there. It rose some other place. So I've generated a map showing where the sun should have risen on that date and that time. He reported and sent it off to him to see, you know, if he can clarify that that's what he saw, that it had moved from that position. I'm using, you know, the ephemeris that tells us where the various planets and moons and everything are at any point in time, any date that within the sampling period that they used. But anyway, you know, depending on how you compare it, I mean, like in Holly's book, she talks about the increase in, volcanoes and earthquakes and this sort of stuff and natural disasters. One study, a 30-year study from 63 to 93, showed that typhoons, mudslides, tidal waves, hurricanes, that kind of stuff, had increased 410%. Now, is that number of or damage by? I don't know, because they didn't say in this documentary. But they did say that overall, and I don't know how they, well, I guess they could measure that, from 1875 to 1975, just 100 years, that overall volcanic activity has increased 500%, or like five times greater than it was in 1875. And that earthquake activity has increased 400% since 73. Now, Holly's figures, are there's graphs in her book about that, but we're all seeing these events and know that there is something amiss, not just on Earth, but for the whole solar system. In fact, you could probably take it to the whole galaxy because, you know, I think, I'm not sure whether I put it in last week's show, but they found a dark area in the center of our galaxy, right close to the black, supermassive black hole that forms our galaxy, you know, right at the center of it. And they found like 10,000 other black holes orbiting the supermassive black hole, which is really quite interesting when you think about it. And here CERN is trying to produce a little tiny microscopic, you know, black hole. You think maybe they just increase the power of their telescopes and see what's happening at the center of our galaxy. Anyway,
I saw an article today, you know, that says scientist predicts global cooling ahead, and I didn't even bother to read it. But what you're saying is it's not a global warming; it's a solar system warming that we're seeing, and it's not just happening here on Earth. We got a bang full of callers, Stan, and if you're ready to take some calls,
one last statement, then we'll go to callers. Okay. Watch four reports of the orbits of planets, especially the outer planets, Saturn, you know, well, even Jupiter, Uranus, and Pluto, and Neptune. Watch them for an increase in the diameter of their orbit. I think our whole solar system is starting to expand. So is the sun. I believe we'll see more reports of this as things change in the next few months to a year or two. So watch news reports for that. Okay, to your callers now. Sorry.
All right. We got John in California. We're coming to you first. John, you're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report with Stan. John, you
John.
There?
Hello, John?
John, going once. Going twice. John.
I'll put you back on hold, John.
Yeah, do that. I talked too long. Sorry.
Let's go to Jeremy in Illinois. Jeremy, you're live with Stan Dale.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, Jeremy.
Hello. Oh, hi there, Stan. How are you doing?
Pretty good. You?
Oh, fine. Doing fine. Oh, I was watching the stupid Ancient Alien show last night, and they finally picked up a theory you guys, well, somebody was on here last year about the moon being hollow, and there's it might be a alien spaceship of some kind, because, well, when Apollo 13 had blasted off, and the lander hit the moon's surface, it rang like a bell on that earthquake.
The seismometer,
or whatever it's called. Seismometer, yeah.
And your question?
And I thought, what do you... the ancient astronauts, they pretty much stole it. Because they just, I guess they're figuring out, they can't figure out anything else, so they're stealing stuff from the fallen angel. A crowd. I was just wondering what you thought about the hollow moon theory.
All right. Now, I saw that report, and I watched a documentary several years back about the moon ringing like a bell for 30 minutes and longer, actually, on the seismometers. And the only thing they could come up with it was that it was like a solid shell around an empty core, that it was a hollow ball. Now, I agree. Now, as to whether it was an alien-made or man-made or human-made of some description, hollow, you know, object to spy on Earth or use as a base, I can't comment because I don't have enough information. But I will tell you this. My developing theory of what makes gravity, the illusion of gravity anyway, as motions in a fluid space, that theory calls for planets as they age to expand and create voids inside of them, and it works for moons, and it works for stars and for galaxies. So if the moon is, you know, relatively cool compared to the Earth because it's smaller and it's had you know, it's radiated its heat out over a great deal of time, the moon would probably have this reasonably thick crust, but pointing toward the center of the moon from underneath that crust would be little sharp like crystalline structures pointed at the center of the moon. And this would be because, like in a geode in geology, when the core cools as it expands, it takes up less space as crystalline things form. And I've seen evidence of this on Mars as well, near the plane where the face of Mars is located. There are evidences there of portions of a moon that collapsed into the surface of Mars, and the inside spilled out and formed these pyramid or crystalline structures, which, you know, the ancient alien crowd are trying to say was made by, you know, aliens, and the face is not really the inside of a planetary moon. It's a chunk that fell down. It's really some kind of intelligent monkey face or whatever. This is all rubbish. But anyway, I do believe that that the moon could be hollow. It might be hollow with a solid core down lower with a void in between. But my physics, the physics I'm developing here in the second paper, do show that red shells can and probably do form as planets age and expand their diameters. Mainstream science one day will catch up with us. And I can say these things. I can go out on a limb because my tenure doesn't depend on it. My salary doesn't depend on it. And I'm a thinker. And any of you out there listening who are thinkers, and I'm sure most of you are, you wouldn't be here listening tonight, you think about these things, and you'll see when I get the paper finished that it is quite logical for the Earth even to have void shells within it going all the way down to the core. As it expands, these shells get bigger, and shells disappear, and new ones form, bigger, smaller, whatever. I know this is probably at least one, maybe two shells within the planet where you have a void. And so that gets us to the argument about, you know, do people live inside the Earth? I suppose if they did, they would be walking upside down to us on the, you know, their feet touching the ground, pointing, you know, their heads pointing toward the core of the planet. And the heat from the core of the planet would be their natural radiative heat and light source, whatever wavelengths they could live in. It might be pretty warm, and that might be a good place for hell to be, I guess, because hell is a bottomless pit. And if you look at the inside of a hollow ball, and you're standing upside down on the surface of it, looking down toward the core, you know, if you're inside that void, to you, it's a bottomless pit because there is no bottom. You just go through to the other side. I hope that kind of answers your question, Jeremy. I got carried away there, but did that do it?
Yeah, we're going to move on, Stan, but that's very interesting to think that it would be the opposite of what is with the way Earth is, you know, the way we walk on the surface of Earth. And to, we read the Bible, it talks about things that are in the Earth that come upon the Earth.
Yeah.
So the hollow Earth theory is something I've always been interested in and I'm very curious about. We're going to go next to Don in North Carolina. Don, you're live on the air with Stan Deo.
Stan Deo, how you doing, man?
Good, Don. You're coming through loud and clear over there.
Good. Yeah, this is Don, the guy with the ponytail. You've Hagman and you Hagman folks know me. Anyway, I'd love to pick your brain on science and everything else. And I first found out about you when you were what they call now on the internet Any Gravity for Dummies.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. Now that was your lecture about any gravity crafts and stuff like that.
Oh, that was back in Roswell in 2005, I think.
Yeah, but it's called Anti Gravity for Dummies now.
Oh well, anyway. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, anyway, I was wondering if you got my emails. I sent you a link of something. This is going to. Let me give you something a little enlightening and a little funny for now. But you used to several years ago. You always used to talk about how the Illuminati or Illuminists would come in and say, well, you've been naughty boys and girls. Well, Daddy just stepped in a room and he has his belt in his hand.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
He used to say that all the time. I don't know if you got my email, but sent you a link where I said that to the commissioners here in the Socialist Republic of Orange County, North Carolina. Did you get those?
Don, what was your... I'm trying to figure out. I'll search and see if I've got the email, if it came through or got trashed. What was your email kind of address?
You must get so many emails, you know, you just can't. I'll send you another one tonight. How's that?
But okay, anyway, that's fine. I do apologize. I get several hundred.
I understand. You're a busy guy. But I actually said to the Orange County commissioners, they were a member of ICLEI, you know, the folks that wrote Agenda 21.
Yep. Okay,
and
all right. Well, I'll have a look at it when it comes in.
Yeah, I borrowed your repertoire, and I put my Bible on a lectern and swore an oath to the Constitution, reminded them that they did the same thing, and they ignored it, and they went with the ICLEI. Anyway, bottom line, I said, well, you've been naughty boys and girls. Well, guess what? Playtime's over. Daddy just stepped in a room. I whipped out my belt and I shook it at them and I said, He's got his belt in his hand. Just, and I said, God bless Orange County. He turned around and walked out. Well, the next day, the sheriff pulled up to my house to shake my hand.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
There you go,
we
Don.
We have a constitutional sheriff. Yeah.
That's great to hear. Thanks for
calling,
Don. Buddy.
Thank you.
We got Karen in New Jersey. We're going to next on Tim in Ohio. Karen in New Jersey, you're live with Stan Dale.
Hi, Stan. How are you?
Good, Karen. Good to hear from you. What's your question tonight?
Well, I was wondering, it's so interesting you were talking about the heavens being stretched out, how the Bible in so many verses talks about God stretching out the heavens. It says in Job and Isaiah and Psalms and a bunch of verses about that. And I think it was Hubble that discovered that. What do you know about the universe expanding?
Well, I agree. I think it's expanding. I have read papers on this and even philosophical papers in, say, India and their ancient records, which for the Brahmins, they say that Brahma sleeps for 100 million years and then he awakes. And when he sleeps, the universe, you know, collapses down to a little kernel. And when he awakes, it explodes into life again. So they have what's called the oscillating version of the universe, that it expands and collapses, expands and collapses. All I can say at this point is it is still expanding, even though evidence shows that it's starting to slow down. Now, Karen, in the Book of Revelation, toward the end of it there, it does say that the earth and the heavens, as we know it, will pass away in a great heat. And that's after the millennial reign. So that fits in with at least my hypothesis or theory, if you wish, of how gravity works and how everything is expanding, and at some point in time, like a bunch of soap bubbles, the galaxies and stars and planets and stuff will just pop and break up and become little tiny pieces of dust, and then those pieces of dust will break up and become whatever the fundamental particle of the universe is. That's up to anybody's guess at this point. CERN doesn't even know that. So,
and one other question.
Sure.
Going back to the verse in Job 38:31, it says, can you bind the chains of Pleiades or loose the cords of Orion? And wasn't it recently learned that Pleiades is a star cluster that's gravitationally bound, but Orion is loose and disintegrating due to lack of gravity? Which also confirms with the
Bible. I didn't know that. I didn't know that, but that sounds very plausible.
It's verse, it's Job 38:31, and it says, can you bind the chains of Pleiades or loose the cords of Orion, which is exactly what they've recently discovered about gravity, that Pleiades is gravitationally bound.
That just doesn't, Job was given, you know, the correct information from God at the time.
Right. Everything goes back.
Yeah. Look, there's a lot of stuff in that book that if we could just look at it with clear eyes, I think we'd discover a lot more about the universe around us than it was given. You know, when God gave Moses the Ten Commandments, he gave him more than that. He gave him a whole encyclopedia of Earth and existence and why we're here. It was in two tablets that God had prepared for Moses up there, and they were like crystalline structures. They were holographic. They stored information in 3D holograms inside of it. And we know this because in the Midrash, I guess you'd call it the tales of the ancient days that the Jewish people read. It's not part of the canon, but anyway, they talk about when Moses broke those stones, threw them down the cliff down there in front of the elders, the stones broke, and the writing on it danced in the air and then disappeared, and the stones' faces were polished smooth. There was nothing there. And this is exactly what would happen if you broke a holographic crystalline structure. It would briefly probably show fragments of what was hidden in there, and then it would just disappear because there was no energy to punch it out. But, that's an interesting subject you brought up, Karen. Really, really good stuff.
Thanks for your call, Karen. We're going to move on to Tim in Ohio. Tim,
mm-hmm.
You're the last call for Stan. Go ahead.
Hi, Stan. This is Tim. My question is about the electric universe. I'm sure you've heard of it, and I would like to get your view on it. And I've been trying to find verses in the scriptures, I use a King James Version, to try to to connect all this together. Can you help me out?
Well, Tim, I do agree that electrical phenomena do accompany what makes our universe work, these various swirling vortices that create star systems and galaxies and planets and moons and stuff like that. Electric charge does play into their spacing in the, say, in a stellar system, spacing inside of the arms of a galaxy or the circles if it's a perfectly symmetrical sombrero-type galaxy. I think some of the things that Velikovsky reported in Worlds in Upheaval, or Worlds in Chaos, I think it was, that, you know, he was talking about, like, Venus bobbing in our time, our lifetime, humans' lifetime, that Venus bobbed in from an outer orbit, or, as I said, an interloper into our system and occupied its current orbit. But as it passed, say, like Mars, a big lightning bolt shot out between them. And this is in the legends and myths of the ancient cultures, say, in Egypt and really old cultures in the Sumerian documents. And I believe that could happen because the things that make lightning or charge like that are electrons. And if you have an imbalance in them, and say, like Venus maybe even being a super... asteroid or comet type thing, it comes whizzing past the other planets down in close to Mars, and of course it's going to have a lot of energy on its atoms as it moves through the different magnetic and gravitational fields and electrostatic fields or electrodynamic fields of the sun. So a lightning is part of the effect, but it's not the only effect that drives everything around. Interestingly, Venus is a just about, I guess it's the only planet that really still rotates backwards. Normally, as planets orbit around the sun, they spin around their own axis in the same direction as they go around the sun. But Venus is upside down. I suspect it will correct itself eventually, but it does show that it's probably an interloper, just like Velikovsky said. And, yeah, the electric universe, there are a lot of electrical phenomena associated with the matter that makes up everything, the sea of energy, if you wish, that we dwell in. There's so many mysteries. Gosh, you know, Tim, I look forward to having a good chin wag with the Lord in a quiet place someday and just ask him a few thousand questions. Don't know about you, but
absolutely.
I would.
Yeah. Tim, we want to thank you for your call. Stan, we got one last question from the audience, and that is telescopes. What is a good telescope specs to just view the planets in our solar system and outer space?
Well, there are a number of very good high-quality telescopes, at least there have been in the past. Those that have been manufactured overseas, I think German ones are better, Swiss, if they got those. Celestron is very good. It's hard to say what is best, but if you want high magnification and really high resolution, you need to have one that hooks up to your computer or its own computer, and you can dial in, I want to see this star, whatever the number of it is, and it will automatically search through the heavens to that point and zoom in on it if you wish, and then record the data in digital form on its computer chip, which you can then pull off and look at it at your leisure, probably inside your home where it's warmer, because most of the nights you see good stuff, it's a bit chilly out there. I would suggest maybe going to consumerreports.org. I don't know if they have a thing on telescopes, but it's a hard question to ask because it's very subjective. It depends on if you are into
Stan, if I want to see the rings of Saturn clearly, would like an 8-inch...
Oh yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
It's depending on the quality of your lens and stuff, you'll see, you know, better stuff. Orion makes it. Celestron makes it. I think if you go to skyandtelescope.com, they'll give you a rundown on various telescopes. And I don't know what the minimum is, but probably about a 4-inch aperture, you can see the rings. I'd get to 8, though, if you want to see them in detail. A 4-inch will let you see the major, say, like a Saturn, the major inner kind of pink ring, and then the faded pink-gray ring around.
Okay.
Just get a good quality lens on it. I think if you go with the leading manufacturers, they'll have pros and cons. And the Sky and Telescope, you'll see they've got blogs in there about, well, I like this one because it lets me do this or see that, that kind of stuff. And they have a whole section on choosing telescopes, you know, especially your first one if you haven't got one. Just go to Sky and Telescope and look for how to choose.
Thank you, brother.
God bless you, Stan. That'll do it for us tonight.
A great show.
Thank you, guys.
Talk to you next week.
All righty. Bye-bye.
And we are out of here. We've left the building.